Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another book club. This week we are talking about a fascinating and discombobulating book called The Man Who Tasted Words. It's by Professor Guy Lechsteiner.
Oh, so close. No. Actually, not even close.
No.
Lechsteiner.
I knew as I was saying it that I'd got the second part. The second part was the bit I'd learned. I thought I could get away with the first bit. Lechsteiner.
Yeah, more or less.
So like Lech and Lechsteiner.
Lechsteiner. Very important.
Lechsteiner.
Yes.
Where's that name originate from?
It's originally sort of Germany, Poland.
Yeah, right. It's a good name. If you were in show business, I would suggest changing it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd get away with it.
Okay. Tell us, for those of us who don't know who you are, Guy, tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm a neurologist. I work at Guy's and St Thomas's Hospitals in central London, and I see a range of people with neurological complaints, sleep disorders, and epilepsy.
Great. And you've written, is this your second book?
It is, yes.
So can you tell us briefly about your first book?
So my first book was called The Nocturnal Brain, and it was all about how sleep disorders, things like insomnia, clock disorders, narcolepsy manifest and what they tell us about our own sleep.
Okay. I haven't yet read that one, but having read this, The Man Who Tasted Words, I will do my best to get back to it. This is absolutely fascinating stuff. Basically, it's a book about our five or more senses and the way, well, sort of how fragile and how amazing they are. And then it's a slightly mind-blowing conclusion about reality. And whether it exists, how would you describe this book?
Well, I think it is a tour of our senses and how they work. We tend to think of our senses as simply being channels of information from the outside world in, but actually it's far more complicated than that, and that the information that we acquire is really interpreted in the context of how we understand the world. And of course, all of that depends on the nuts and bolts of how our nervous systems and indeed the whole of our bodies are put together, which means that actually, depending on how we are put together, and that's influenced by genes, it's influenced by our environment, can really mean that we all perceive the world in a very different way.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a very long answer to the question that we maybe all asked as kids, is, you know, is what I see as red what you see as red, is that the same color or are they different colors? Which, you know, is sort of moot because obviously unless you're colorblind, it doesn't matter if it is a different color, but it sort of is that, isn't it? It's about whether, about the way, well, you know, the different, it's fascinating as it goes on because it's about the possibilities of different perceptions. And obviously once we get into the idea of being able to taste words or give colors to sounds and things like that, that's actually a completely different way of observing whatever the hell the real world is. So
And by the end of the book, as you say, there, you know, I come to the conclusion that actually we all don't really understand what reality is, and that reality may be different for all of us.
Yeah, which again, you know, is something again as a child or as a, you know, that kind of inquiring mind, it does feel. You talk about Hoffman, who thinks that our senses are actually hiding reality rather than interpreting reality, and that there is no time and space. But that sort of, it sort of makes sense, the idea that, you know, if you think of, like, I was just talking on my other podcast the other day about the mites on our faces that go into our pores and have sex with, come out and have sex with each other and defecate on our faces, and we don't even know they're there. If they tried to make sense, if they were able to make sense of their universe, it wouldn't really be, it would be only of their immediate environment. They couldn't really understand what the bigger picture was. And I suppose that's almost certainly true of humanity. As much as we do understand, as much as we've worked out, there's every chance we're just sex mites on someone's face and we don't know about it.
That's a cheery thought.
But what's interesting about this book, in fact, Professor Alice Roberts, who's given you some nice reviews, and I believe interviewed, was on a previous edition and did recommend this book. So it's nice to have you on after a recommendation. And she was impressed by the way that it's a sort of book. I mean, she said it was sort of written by you and the patients, which isn't exactly true, but the patients, it's you taking case studies and very much and naming the patients, which often doesn't happen in books like these, and giving us a bit of their life story, but also their story of how they've coped with conditions where something has gone wrong with their senses.
Yeah, one of the problems with this kind of book is that often doctors have to anonymize the story of the patients that they're describing. But actually, I took a different view, which is that if I anonymize them, then you really don't get to grips. You don't get a true flavor of them as individuals. And actually, all of the patients who were described in this book were on board with this. They saw the chapters. They gave their approval in an effort to try and minimize any anonymization at all.
Yeah, so a few people you've changed their names, I guess, if they've asked to do so, but basically it's, you know, we get a little view into your life, I think, which is always nice. I think when although it's a very academic book and there's a lot to learn from it, it's kind of nice when it, which I think Alice does brilliantly as well, is it just you get a little bit of the personality of the author as well. But I think absolutely the way you go into the lives and the broader lives of the patients. I mean, it makes, there's some very shocking stories in there and sort of upsetting stories. I mean, the early on you talk about a man who's unable to feel pain, basically. So has spent his whole childhood just jumping off roofs and pulling out. I mean, there's a kind of horror, sort of awful bit where he's, him and his sister, who's got the same condition, have pulled all their teeth out because for fun, and they're just laughing as they pull their teeth out. But I mean there's a lot of very fascinating stories about that. So tell us, what in that instance, for example, what's the condition that has led that guy to not be able to feel pain?
Yeah, Paul has a condition called congenital insensitivity to pain, which is a very rare disorder that has an underlying basis in his genetics. And unfortunately, both he and his two siblings have that condition because they've inherited two copies of the faulty gene, one from their mother and one from their father. Essentially, they've never been able to feel physical pain. And as a result, they really have learned none of the lessons that really pain gives us. So pain is intrinsic to the human experience, and it's very difficult to think of a life completely devoid of pain, Paul and his siblings give a very good illustration of that. So unfortunately, one of his siblings passed away as a result of this congenital insensitivity to pain. She was not able to feel the pain of an infection inside her abdomen, and as a result, it wasn't recognized. But when you speak to Paul and you speak to his parents, you know, the stories of his childhood are absolutely horrifying. You know, even having thought about Paul and written about Paul, I'm still, when I think about the stories that he told me, it's absolutely horrifying.
Because you know, there's an element with almost, I mean, at the beginning of the book, you ask the reader to rank their senses and which ones they would say they definitely didn't want to lose and which one they would want to keep. And obviously, as you go through, you realize how essential they all are in different ways. So you would sort of feel like feeling no pain would be, as you talk about it, it's sort of almost like a superpower, that you're like a superhero. But of course, it doesn't turn out that way. And if you injure yourself all the time, you have long term injuries, and as you say, you know, it's you're obviously much prone to death in any case. So it's a weird thing to think of, you know, this thing that we would see as such a negative in our lives, the thing that we fear, but that we actually, you know, we need that not to be human, because obviously you're still human if you haven't got pain, but you know, to live a fulfilling life and to be safe, you need to know that the pain is there to help us, even though obviously when it comes, that's not how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, the pain is fundamental to human survival, and the only reason why Paul and his sister are alive is because of modern medicine. You know, in any other circumstance, their demise would have happened many, many years ago.
Yeah, but it's sort of fascinating as you go through each of these things, and many of them are about people who have either lost a sense, or you know, or it works in a different way. The thing I wanted to mention that really stuck with me out of everything, weirdly, it's quite a nice idea you have in the book about how speech is, you know, a form of telepathy, which I hadn't really thought of, which also, I suppose, a book is a form of telepathy as well. But like, you create sound waves that go into someone else's head and let them know what you're thinking. And then with a book, presumably through light waves or whatever, you know more about this than me, that you're actually, you know, that's exciting and interesting, that you can, it's an interesting way to think of it, but it is a kind of beautiful way to think about it, that to just talking to someone is telepathy. Reading something, you can hear the thoughts of someone who died 2,000 years ago, as you know, it's, or I guess if you record someone, you can get the thoughts of someone 200, 150 years ago. But that really stuck with me. I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful idea.
I can't claim credit for that one, unfortunately. Right. That comes from elsewhere. But it is amazing if you think about it, that essentially what many of our senses do is they give us a huge amount of information at a distance. And that information gives us an understanding of reality, and we can talk about what that reality actually is, but it also allows for the communication of ideas, of emotions, of a whole range of other things that allow us to function as a society.
Yeah, and you explain that there obviously are, you know, we traditionally see the world as five senses, but actually there's more than that, really, because of balance. And I mean, you explain what on top of the five senses, what would you say we also have?
Well, I think that one of the senses that is often described as the sixth sense, although I would take issue with that, is this concept of what's termed proprioception. That is knowing where our bodies are in space, where our body parts in relation to each other are. And, you know, this is something that is an entirely unconscious sense. But when you lose it, as one of the patients in the book that I describe has done, then the impact of that is absolutely huge. So the inability to know where your legs are in relation to your body, of course, would mean that you are completely unable to walk. Some of the other senses that I describe, as you say, is the sense of balance, which, you know, we all take for granted. It's only, for example, when you're playing those childhood games like spinning round and round on a merry-go-round and you try and walk in a straight line, that you realize quite what a big impact that has on everyday life. And indeed, some of the other individuals that I describe in the book have impairment of their sense of balance as a result of ear problems, for example, and their lives have essentially ceased to exist in the way that they did before they developed these problems.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things in the book that slightly touch on things that have happened to me. One of the, you know, I've had that benign positional vertigo, which is just again an in-ear ear thing, which you talk. Well, you've got little bits in your ear moving around mm-hmm. that make you just feel very dizzy all the time. And as you say, luckily that one's quite an easy one to cure. Though the first time I had it for ages, and I think it just went away on its own. Mm. The last time I had it, I managed to do the movements on my own. But I don't think, because you talk about people throwing up on you and grasping onto you as you're doing the movements of them.
Good times.
Yeah. I didn't have it quite that bad, I don't think. But I do have aphantasia, which I only found. Now, I only realized this during lockdown. And I've talked about it a lot on various podcasts. So my listeners will have heard this before, probably. But that sort of it. So I've basically got a blind mind's eye, though I didn't realize that. And I thought, and I actually, until I did the experiment, I assumed that I could see images in my head. And so I was, you talk about people realizing in their teens, but I didn't realize till I was 53 that I had this. Mm. Although I'm not sure, I would surely have noticed if I'd been able to form images before and then couldn't, unless it happened very gradually. But I sort of seem to remember. I remember as a kid, when I was learning things, I seem to remember seeing like the page of that I was learning and be able to remember where on the page things were, which suggests that I could once have mental images. That's quite common, right? I mean, I've met quite a lot of people I met the girl last night who had the same thing.
Yeah. So aphantasia is within the realm of normal humanity. So we know that a substantial proportion of individuals have no mind's eye. Some people have a very good mind's eye, and there's a range of people in between. I guess what you're referring to is this concept of loss of a particular ability or loss of a particular sense. I guess aphantasia refers to almost an internal sense rather than an external sense. It's your internal vision, your ability to conjure up visual images in your mind. But, you know, one of the common themes throughout the book is the fact that, you know, the loss can occur in two ways. It can be something that was never there in the first place, which is loss in a way, because you realize that you perhaps don't have the same faculties or facilities that other people have, but is probably not going to fundamentally change your own perception of your life, or there is loss that is acquired. And one of the people that I describe is a young woman who had a stroke that resulted in her losing her mind's eye, which was of massive importance to her because she was actually working as an artist at the time. And the loss of her mind's eye really fundamentally changed her own picture of herself and her ability to function.
Yeah, and I find it interesting because she talks about not having doors on her cupboard because she can't imagine what's inside her cupboard. But I can imagine what's inside a cupboard. I just can't picture it. And so it, is that because she's got so? I've obviously found a way round. And I was talking to this girl last night at the gig. I was going, it sort of feels like, you know, I can sort of imagine my kids' faces.
but it's sort of happening almost. And you talk about this in another context. Maybe it's about the colours and stuff. It's almost like it's happening behind my field of vision. Mm. So I've kind of got, it's like a reflection on water that kind of is there and disappears. And it feels like it's happening back there rather than in front of my eyes. So I can still, you know, I know what's in the fridge. I can tell you what's in each layer of the fridge, and I can, you know, I can tell you what color the pot. But maybe it's because I've got used to thinking of things in words rather than images, possibly.
But it's also important to remember that this is a range of severity, and it may be that actually, although you're at the bottom end of that range, you haven't lost it completely. So you have a weak mind's eye rather than no mind's eye.
Right. Can I cure it is the question. Is there any way I can get my mind's eye back or discover it?
Not that we're aware of, unfortunately. This is part and parcel of who you are, Richard.
No. I mean, I do. I wish I hadn't found out, because I was happy not knowing. I was happy living in my blank world. But those sort of things are fascinating. And obviously, The Man Who Tasted Words is the title of the book. And that's such a fascinating chapter about the man in question, who's I'm sure you know the name of, but did I write down his name? Anyway,
James.
That's right. Yeah, it's often about tube station. If you say a tube station to him, he can tell you what that tube station tastes of, or what the words make him. And so he's actually tasting that in his mouth as he says those words. It's sort of a feeling, or is it?
It's an actual taste. So, you know, and it doesn't rely on him saying those words. It relies on him hearing or even reading those words. So every time he experiences a word, that is associated with a very real taste of food in his mouth, or sometimes not even food. Sometimes it can be rather unpleasant things. He describes vividly when a childhood friend of his went out with a woman called Irene, and Irene tasted of lumpy vomit, for example. So he couldn't really understand why his friend was attracted to Irene. So this is really a true merging of the senses.
Yeah, I mean, it's again a lot. It's another one that feels like, oh, that's kind of amazing, but would surely be like a curse as well, because because you're not in control of the input coming in. If you were able to control that and say, right, okay, I'm going to taste what this word tastes like, that might be quite good fun. But for to have that, it must be an information overload a lot of the time.
It is. For him, it's very distracting sometimes. You know, look, the concept of synesthesia, so this merging of the senses, in many ways is very enriching. And I give the example of a musician who hears, when she hears music, she sees colors and she experiences sensations, and that must be an incredibly enriching experience for her. But for James, you know, this constant tasting of things every time he hears or sees words, it can be very distracting. He gives a very good illustration of, for example, being in the exam room as a schoolboy, and the clatter of a pencil being dropped on the floor, or hearing shouts from outside, would flood his mouth with particular tastes, which he found very distracting. And that's the case with certain types of music as well.
Yeah, and you talk, the lady who sees the colours also, but it weirdly talks about a certain music giving her a pain in her thumb, which is sort of, but is it an exquisite delight almost? This pain makes her as happy as she can be, but it's a pain in her thumb, which is again a very strange idea.
There's so many strange things in this.
but it makes you realize, you know, because often like a tumor has grown and moved something around, or just there's something's gone a little bit wrong in the body, and it kind of is a slightly frightening book, because you sort of start worrying, oh my god, what if that happens to me? You know, you realize how fragile your ability to, you know, to taste and smell, because smell, so like you say, smell, you might go, I'm not bothered about smell, you know, that doesn't matter too much. But then, you know, when I met, you talk about this, about the role in finding a mate, how important it is. I remember when I met my wife, the smell that came off the top of her head was just the most amazing thing I'd ever, you know, and I just have never experienced anything like it. And I think that was, there was obviously like a lot of chemicals coming out.
A lot of pheromones.
Pheromones coming out saying, here we go, this is the one. But like, if you don't have that, you know, you lose so much in your life. Obviously, is connected with taste, but also, you know, not being able to smell bad things and keep away from bad things, and not you talk about the way that smell is so associated with memory as well. You have quite an unpleasant example of how that's worked for you.
Yeah. So, you know, when I started writing the book, and in the one of the early chapters, I ask people to rank their senses in terms of which they would lose most happily, or happily is perhaps not the right word, but which they would be most prepared to sacrifice. And certainly smell ranked fairly low down on my list. I think by the end of writing this book, you know, the implications of the loss of sense of smell became really quite apparent. So, you know, memory, as you say, but also emotion. It's about emotional processing. You know, we know that, for example, the loss of sense of smell is strongly associated with depression and vice versa. And the loss of sense of smell has some important clues, for example, as a precursor of conditions like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease. Now, obviously, at the moment, everybody is very focused on smell because of COVID. And the consequences of a long-term loss of smell may be actually much more significant than we initially consider.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is this whole package, and it is this way we experience whatever reality is and whatever we make of reality. And obviously, there, as you say, again, there's things that that we don't know, you know, that we don't, there's obviously the colors we don't see and the waves we don't, the sound, the various waves that we don't have any way of biologically speaking finding out about, that because they don't do us any immediate harm, so there's no evolutionary benefit in knowing about them. So there's it is a sort of real, it really you know, it's an unsettling book in a lot of ways, and just in making you sort of dive deep into your own fragility, into your own humanity, but also then working, you know, using that to try and work out exactly what's going on. I know you're not as you're not like behind Hoffman exactly in his idea that that reality is our senses are hiding reality from us, but it does sort of make sense that our senses are there to keep us safe and keep us going. And as long, and that's the sort of biological imperative. So it would make sense that I mean, like you talk about the Matrix, and it's not the Matrix because he's still in time and space when he comes out of the Matrix. You know, it is sort of interesting that the senses could be, they're working for us, but they only in terms of keeping us here and alive.
Yeah, I mean, it is mind-blowing even now, yeah. having written this book. And I've, you know, one of the major reasons why I find Hoffman's theory quite difficult to stomach is because it runs so contrary to my own experiences as a human being rather than as a doctor. yeah. And when you think about it too much, you know, your head explodes. But I think the other aspect of this is that our sense of reality is to some extent very largely defined by our brains and by the model that our brains have of the world around us, how we understand the world and what our expectations of the world are. So it's not just the raw senses, it's not just the raw information coming in, but it's this model of the world that is essentially, some of which is hardwired, some of which is there from the day that we're born, but is constantly being tweaked. And it's perhaps not therefore that surprising that each of us have a slightly different model of the world and therefore can perceive, even if the senses are unaffected, may actually perceive reality to be somewhat different to the person sitting next to us.
Yeah, I mean, definitely with that, you know, again, it's what you mentioned in the chapter, but if someone's seeing colours when they hear sound, and that lady suggests that she thinks certain composers may also have experienced that because it sort of fits so closely with her own experience. But that is definitely, you know, if you're experiencing the world in that way, then that life is different enough. I mean, that almost feels like an evolutionary step possibly forwards, or just another side, you know,
a sidestep.
a sidestep yeah. or a different direction. But if all those people who could do that got together and went on an island and stayed together for 10,000, 100,000 years, it'd be interesting to see what that developed into. But you know, because I think it is fascinating to realize there are you know, we're told things, aren't we, and that idea that it's not really five senses and that we can consider other things as senses. Is you know, that's mind blowing enough in itself, really. I was really glad to see Bill Oddie pop up in the book, who I'm a big fan of and who's done the podcast before. But that was an interesting story with Bill.
Yeah, that's about as close to comedy as I get, very vicariously. So Bill was very, very helpful in the writing of this book and the associated radio series, in that Bill has been losing his hearing for a little while, and it has a massive impact on his ability to hear the calls of birds. Of course, he's a famous tweeter. But that in itself is not the main event. Actually, a few years ago, Bill started hearing musical hallucinations. So wherever he was in his house, he would hear a soundtrack to his life that he initially thought was due to the neighbors playing their music a bit too loudly. But it soon became apparent that actually he's suffering from musical hallucinations. It's the style of music that he really takes offense to, because it's the precise type of music that he absolutely hates. And at one point he said to me that he wished his cranial DJ could be changed. But you know, I think that what this really illustrates is the fact that many of our experiences originate from the brain rather than from our peripheral senses. And Bill gives a very good illustration of that.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of makes you think about, you know, what ghosts may be and where the idea of ghosts comes from, which obviously is as long as you accept that there aren't ghosts. That, you know, me and my wife, when we had when our son was young and we just moved into this house, we both of us would hear a baby crying in the house, and we'd go in and our baby would be asleep. and we're both tuned into the idea of babies crying, and it was obviously something else. We did hear it, or we both were imagining it. But it's sort of fascinating that two people could have that same experience about something that either wasn't there or that they were misinterpreting.
Well, it's about the expectation of hearing a baby crying. It's a bit like the you know, the mobile phone vibrating in your pocket. When you're expecting a call, you're constantly pulling out your phone thinking that it might be vibrating, only to find that it isn't. It's about interpreting our sensory inputs in the context of our expectation of the world.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that it's such a fascinating book. There's so much stuff we could talk about. I don't want to talk about everything in it, because it's because I'd like people to read it and find stuff out for themselves. So it is. Are you planning another book? Have you got something else?
I have plans.
Okay. It's such an interesting area, though. I mean, obviously, sleep is a very interesting area as well, which the other book covers. But are you sort of limited to the work you're doing, or are you now sort of moving beyond your job and looking at other things beyond?
Well, I think looking at things beyond my job in the context of the brain and how it works and clinical neurology, you know, I think the fascination of neurology is that the brain and the nervous system essentially defines pretty much every aspect of our being. And that's the joy of neurology. That's the joy of neuroscience.
Yeah. Well, it's terrific book, The Man Who Tasted Words. It's highly, lots of good reviews and highly recommended by many people, and rightly so. Are you reading anything yourself that you would like to recommend to me and the listeners of this podcast?
Well, I'm just about to start The Escape Artist, but I think everybody is reading that at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good to get a common one as well. Look, it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on, and good luck with the book. And I don't know who's going to be the guest next week, actually, because we've got ahead of ourselves. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
To Professor Guy Lechner.
Oh, Lechner.
I'm not having you on again. It's too hard to say your name. It's too hard.
I'll have to change my name by default next time.
Thank you, Guy. That was awesome.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.